And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Chip Tatum and Ulla Dammegård about the corruption behind everything from the Iran-Contra affair up to the Pegasus project and everything that has been, you know, involved in that. And I wanted to kind of zoom out a little bit in this in the beginning here and talk a little bit more about what how you've pieced together this puzzle a little bit as well, Chip. I mean, because I guess that this is something that you've realized in hindsight as you've seen things. I wouldn't guess that you've been briefed on a lot of these things that you're now talking about in regards to some of the missions, right? So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about how you see the picture of how the whole military-industrial complex is being used and for what purposes to drive, you know, the geopolitical situation of where they're seeking to steer the world with all the wars that we have and everything. How do you explain that to someone who's not familiar with that, of what the agenda is here and how these people are using the means that they have to achieve that?
Back in my active days, we would have staff meetings. I mean, it was that simple. We were very compartmentalized in what we did. However, on several occasions, we would meet with Mr. Bush in Jupiter Island and with several others in our chain of command. And just from remarks about what they said, they were, you know, whenever you have an operation and you have a goal for that operation, something is always goes amiss, and not particularly in the operation, but in the response to that operation. So it requires a second operation to try to move that response to where you want it to go. And we would invariably hear them complaining about it not being exactly how they want, and so we have to go and move this, or we'd have to do that. And just by these movements, the way they would be trying to move entities, whether it be a politician or an ideal of another country or a direction of another country, and it normally did involve the other countries and billions of dollars, for us to we would have to basically go back in and do something in addition, just to make sure that we get them on the right track. And so, you know, just simply by that, you see and you feel and you hear their remarks and the sly remarks on the side, you know, their little meetings on the side as they're talking about things, and they pointing over to us as the several commanders who were in there. Well, we need him to do this, and we need him. And you know, they're pretty stupid if they think we as commanders aren't talking to one another.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
And we do. And so we start tying these missions together, these operations together. And granted, I can look at it from one standpoint with all the information, and you could look at it from another standpoint with the information you have, and we would come up with completely different results. The results I came up with, I feel pretty strong about, and it's pretty well among all four of us who were commanders at the time, the direction they were going and how they were using, misutilizing our talents, government assets, to guide things in a particular direction that really wasn't for the best of the United States, but it was for the betterment of what they were trying to build.
Right. Yeah. Now, I mean, I think that there are very few people who actually wake up in the morning and say, okay, let's see how I can spread evil in the world today, whose life I can ruin and make the conditions on this planet worse, you know? So the question is, how are these people like when you were with them in meetings and everything? Do they believe that they're doing good? Are they trying to justify it in some way? How would you explain that?
No, they're trying to make us believe that they're doing good.
Right, yeah.
There's no doubt that they know what they're doing.
But intention, you're saying then, is a true, it's of an evil spirit, or how would you define that if that's their true intention and motive?
George H.W. Bush is the most evil entity I've met in my life. And look, I've had to work undercover, under, you know, down in the dredges, down in the dirt, down in the gutter with some of the worst in the world. And there's no one. He's a brilliant man, but he will hold back at nothing to get what he wants. We've been in situations where we would be talking about collateral damage, and he'd just say, the hell with those families. Take them out. Don't worry about it. You know?
Yeah.
And we were family. We were family men, and we're very, very strongly against that. And so every time we would hold a mission, and we would, the mission wouldn't be as successful because we didn't go after particular entities with civilians involved. They would get pretty ticked off at us.
It's almost like, to me, it seems like that's something that they want to do. They want to try to. I'm just trying to get closer to if this is a conscious, you know, act in that regard. But it's almost like, I mean, a lot of people are getting smart to this now and knows what activities, you know, they've been involved in and everything else. And you think that they would be smarter to a certain extent of how they would portray themselves, even in the kind of setting that you're describing. But that seems not to be the case. They're just, they have a goal, their mind is set to it. How would you explain it? Are we talking about psychopathic individuals, or is there something else that's driving them?
Well, you know, let me give you one example. Noriega. I recall one meeting after the neutralization of Noriega. He was already arrested, and he was in custody. They said, what we need to do is we need to get it out to the media that he was a child molester, that he was a devil worshiper. And so all of a sudden, stories about him doing killing chickens and doing special things in the backyard of one of his homes in Panama City started coming out. It disappeared pretty quickly, but it was coming out. That's the kind of things that they dream these things up. And, you know, what kind of mind dreams these things up?
Yeah,
I don't know how to explain what kind of people they were. They're just evil bastards. That's the only way I know.
But yeah. how did they see themselves? Are they proud of what they're doing? Are they good friends? Are they able to be a good friend to other people and so on?
They're very good friends with other people until the other person crosses them. You know, you cross Bush, and I mean just in his personality. You kid him about something, he had a little bit of a lisp. You kid him about that little bit of a lisp, boy, he just turns red in the face and comes right into your face. They can't take criticism, and they can't take failure. They feel that they're doing the best for the generations to come, and they feel that they're doing the best to take what is a chopped up planet and put it into a global peace rather than a bunch of, you know, like a disco ball. They want to make a solid glass ball instead of all the chopped up mirrors on the disco ball.
Right. Yeah. And that's the New World Order right there. And it's their task, right, to fix something which they perceive as being, as being broken, I guess.
Right.
What are some of the other people you encountered as well? I mean, have you met Henry Kissinger? You mentioned, I read earlier an account as well. You were obviously in contact with Ollie North and all that. But are there some of the other high up people you've met and talked with?
Sure. I was on the Nixon mission to China back in the 70s, and we worked with Kissinger on several flights back and forth. I worked communications for him. Worked in the basement of the White House and White House communications for a while. So we met everyone who was in the White House at the time during the Nixon administration. I was air traffic controller for Nixon when he would fly to Key Biscayne, to his White House down there, his vacation home. What happened at Homestead, the Air Force base, whenever Nixon would go down, I was actually stationed there, for about a 12-month period. And I didn't have to work except when Nixon flew down. Then I'd have to go take over the control tower and control in Air Force One. They didn't want other controllers controlling them, just White House communications personnel. So you meet a lot, and you see a lot, and you hear a lot. Beyond that, I met Isaac Rabin. I've met Margaret Thatcher. I've met General Peirce of the NSA. I've met many of the MI6 leaders, secret MI6 leaders in London in meetings. You know, in the OSGs, we did work for them. I mean, they would call some of the missions. Some of the things that Israel couldn't do to their own people, we would be called to do that for them, so it didn't go against their religious beliefs. Some of the things that England didn't feel that they were comfortable doing, we would do for them, so it didn't go against the crust there.
Wow.
Is this also why there's, last year there were, I can't remember how many thousand foreign troops being taken to the States.
Yes, and there's even more now, but we've always trained foreign troops. When I went through ATC school, we had foreign troops training. We had Saudi pilots coming in training at the airfield in Keesler where we were. We've always done that, and I imagine we'll continue to do that only because we're one of the largest military mechanisms in the world, and what we do very well. And there's a great benefit in us training them to do things the way we want them, because then it's easier for us to recruit them, if you catch the drift there.
Oh.
Look, we bring a young officer over, you know, and we train him how to fly a helicopter. Say we bring a little royalty over from Jordan and train him how to fly helicopters. He becomes our best friend. And so whenever we need anything from King Abdul, Abe will do it for us, you know. He trained with us, so.
Yeah, it's the regular kind of nepotism, back-scratching kind of attitude that exists in all the all of human society, really, right? But how important is the interface of, like, think tanks, meeting groups, and even secret societies into this as well? We have things like the, you know, Bohemian Grove, the Bilderberg meeting, obviously, but there's tons more. Mount Pelerin Society, the Circle, you know, it just goes on, right? So is all of that kind of tied into the interface that you've seen within the military environment as well?
Not really in the military, but in what they call their circle of trust, yes. The nefarious things that they do, in later years, they just can't handle it all, you know. So they have to be able to have a very tight circle of trust where they know that when these missions, when they talk about what they talk about, it doesn't go beyond those ears. And without that circle of trust, how do you perform that circle of trust? Those are usually formed very, very early in years in these secret societies and universities and in other entities where they're actually brought up in that realm.
Yeah, the Skull and Bones, you have a number of, you know, Book and Key, and not only Yale, but every there's so many fraternities, and that seems to be where it's kind of those relationships are built as well. Now,
but also built in those are things that they have to do for induction ceremonies,
right?
And those could be filmed and held against them the rest of their life, so that they don't waver. Just so you understand that.
Oh, but well, that's why they're like you know, masturbating in a coffin, and allegedly, I've even heard that they've some of them have been
right,
forced
right.
to have sex with each other, right? And they actually film that and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow. Now, so George Herbert Walker Bush, he's kind of getting up there now age-wise, and it seems to me that you've kind of very much put him at one of the apex positions here, if you will. Is he very much still kind of the director of the agenda, or as far as you're concerned, is there anyone else that kind of has taken over the reins here?
No, I think he's pretty well gone and has been for a while, as far as only by name he's there and by statute. There are a lot younger people out there, not young, but younger than he, and more able to continue. And it doesn't have to necessarily be U.S. citizens. There are very able people from around the world who were working with us early in years, who I'm sure have rallied for positions of hierarchy with them.
Yeah, definitely, indeed. So where do you see if you look at the world today, Chip, and take a look at all the geopolitical stuff with ongoings with, of course, trying to ramp up the conflicts both in Iran and Syria. We, of course, have the Russian situation as well with Crimea and everything else. And now and then we do get kind of behind the scenes ideas of what the mentality is like. For example, when, we had the spokesperson there who was talking about Ukraine, and basically telling, you know, fuck the EU, basically. Julia, what was her name again? I forget her name now. It'll come to me in a minute. But nonetheless, if we look at the bigger picture like that, how do you see that this is going to unfold? I mean, do you think that we're talking about people who are interested in major military conflict, possibly another war? Or where do you think they want to take this?
War builds kings.
Right,
you know, there's a lot of money that trades hands in wars, and it creates a huge, larger division between normal people and the elite, and those who have money, those who have and who have not. It makes that division even larger. And the one thing that they've always stated is they wanted that division, that they needed that division to be there to be able to control the masses the way they need to. And not only for the control, but for building the coffers also. Look, there's a huge move in working only with gold and silver and precious metals and other things right now. And those were planned in early on, getting currencies backed by particular minerals,
right,
or a mix of minerals. You know, those were all discussed years ago. There was a thing called, I believe it was called Digital Monetary Trust, that tried this years ago and ended up being shut down by the feds. And the people who were running it ended up dying of a heart attack or something.
Right. Yeah.
So,
well, nothing to laugh at.
And the money, yeah, and the monies never were found. I happen to know Olin Gravey, who ran the Digital Monetary Trust. And I know he didn't have any money. So where'd that money go? When the feds locked it down there, or when whoever locked it down, they also took that money out. When we went into Panama, the money sitting in Panama National Bank, all the U.S. dollars sitting there, they were taken out. So there were pallets of monies, saran wrapped on the pallets, flown out of that country in C-141s.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Where do they store all this? Are there banks willing to accept all this money and loot, or is it just a, because that's got to be part of the criminal network in itself? And I'm saying, of course, the banks are, you know, driving a lot of this agenda as well. Of course, I got that, but you know, again, for those who don't know, how are they taking care of all this loot, and how are they, you know, investing it in other things, maybe?
Well, you know, I believe that the bankers actually started the global economy, so you know they're 100% behind whatever needs to be behind.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Doing whatever they can do, and to stay within the law. Yet, if the enforcers of the law are asking them to do these things, they're going to do what they want to, because those people naturally are above the law if they're the enforcers. I don't see, you know. I know of movements just recently that have gone from London and from the Isle of Man to Liechtenstein. I don't know exactly what's going on, but I know that Liechtenstein is one of the few countries that deals internationally with the yuan. So there's a lot of money being moved there because they do deal in yuan.
Right.
This greed, I don't understand it. I mean, why this incredibly greed? Why isn't it enough ever?
It's about control, right? It's not about the money.
No, money is power, and it's control. If the one with the most money gets the most power. I just recently heard that there's concern that Putin has $40 billion in a bank hidden in a bank of his own, and that's just a little bit of what they know about. And so there's a lot of concern on the others' parts. Well, if he has that much money, we have to get more because we need to make sure that we're more powerful than him. You know, Ole, that's the way they think. The money is just a measure of power. That's all it is to them.
Yeah.
And if they see someone with money, they think that they can take that money from them, they will do all that they can to get that money out of that person's hands and into theirs.
Charming.
Because the money gives you opportunity. You can build things with it, both in a good way and a bad way, right? So they just realize in the way to control the environment and be in control of the world, really, at the end of the day, you need to take away people's ability to potentially do something good or bad in the world. And it's ultimate control. Look at Libya again, the huge the sovereign wealth fund that they had there, right? Looted. Same thing with they went into Iraq. They set up a central bank. It's very much the same pattern and template being used in these countries.
Sure. You can compare it back to the old movie, The Highlander. You know, take the head off this guy, receive his power.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Wow. So, what did you think about I don't know how involved you are, Chip, because again, as Ola detailed earlier, I remember listening to a lot of interviews and you know, talks and articles and stuff like that you did many, many, many years ago. And that was kind of the pre-9/11 issue and all that kind of stuff. And we've had some interesting developments there lately. Of course, we have the whole Bin Laden story in itself. And maybe that's something you could comment on, the way that the SEAL team was killed afterwards. The body was dumped over shore. We don't even know if they ever... First of all, we don't even know if he was alive to begin with because of his kidney issues way back when in early 2000s there. But the whole scenario of 9/11, going after Bin Laden and all that stuff, how do you view that?
No debris field, no crash. In other words, no body, no death. But a president has to have deflection. He was going through a time that he needed a bad guy, and he needed to show that he was being able to accomplish something. And so they went in and they did their little thing. You know, look, if it had really happened, I cannot see these SEALs being able to write books about it. They'd be in federal prison.
Right.
It's the law. I mean, I went through it. I just went through that whole thing. You can't talk about it unless you have a federal judge saying you can talk about it, or the CIA signs off on it, or the White House signs off on it. Someone signs off if it was real. Those are the key. If it was real.
And 9/11 as an event?
You know, I was in Costa Rica. My attorney who was the Minister of Intelligence called me and said, "Chip, turn on TV. Look at this." And you know, all I saw were the recordings of the planes hitting the Twin Towers. I honestly don't know. I had never looked into it, and even since I've been back, I haven't looked into it. I've heard several theories as to what went on there, but as to what really went on, I haven't. I really don't know. I mean, I've heard that the planes were holograms. I've heard that they were military planes, remote controlled. I will say this. My son wanted to go into the military, so I got him a great position in Washington working in the old guard in the National Cemetery, and a real safe place during the war. So I thought, and he was in processing, and he happened to be over at the Pentagon and ended up doing cleanup there. And he told me, "Dad, you know, it was pretty bad. There were parts and bodies everywhere." So.
Yeah, it's a huge inside story there. Obviously, there's a big story overall for you there to look into with a lot of information. But you do have knowledge of false flag attacks prior to this particular event, right? You even talked about some of the ones that you've been part of, right?
They have no qualms about doing a false flag event.
Yeah. Can you remind us of a few? Was there any specifically that you were involved in or knew directly about?
Well. Operation Red Rock was the only one I was specifically involved in. But we've set up a lot of people. Well, like Gary Hart, we set Gary Hart up. Not a false flag event, but we put a woman in and filmed it and then put it out in the media just to get him out of the presidential run because he was a forerunner. There's, you know, putting me on the spot to make me think about actual false flag events, I can't, but I'll think about it, and I know something will come back up in the back of my mind. I know that there are some that I saw, I just can't recall what.
Right, yeah.
Could you comment on these? I mean, there's a lot of evidence coming forward with many of these mass shootings and so-called terror acts where they've now started using actors and so on. Is that something you could comment on?
I really can't. I have a good friend who just today showed me a video of and I think it's on the Sandy Hook, a man who was walking in, smiling, getting ready and as an actor, and then got into form, you know, how you work to get into form, get the tears flowing, get the throat choking and everything. That guy ought to be shot, you know.
something going on there. Yeah, Wolfgang Halbig, a very, very, very brave gentleman as well, have actually done some really interesting investigations into Sandy Hook. I guess you did you see any of that, Ulla?
Yeah, a lot of it. And I mean, it's just absolutely mind-blowing once you get into it. And it's so obvious once you really start seeing how it's all done. even how they use the same actors for multiple of these so-called events. And I think it's becoming really, really sloppy. No real preparations, no good budget. They're just pumping them out there on such a regular basis now. It's almost like the terror of the day, you know, how can we keep the population in constant fear? So they just pump it out on a weekly basis, just pump, pump, pump. And I think the reasons why they use the same people as well is to keep it to as few people to control as possible.
I wanted to ask you about that particularly as well, Chip, because are they sloppy or are they incredibly focused and disciplined and every minute detail is planned to the nth degree? How are they operational-wise?
The larger number of people that you have involved in any operation requires more control. So if you're looking at a large operation, you're going to have a lot of control, and that's very difficult in today's age with technology the way it is. They start out with these a few of these that you see happening. They start out paying attention, what we call attention to detail, and then as time goes on, they just feel, well, we got away with that, so we don't have to worry last time. So, you know, let's just continue on that track and not be so attentive to detail, but let's get a few more of them out the door. Just like with the movies, version 1, 2, and 3, the later ones become less attentive and less attractive than the early ones normally because less attention was given to them. Even today, we have a stabbing of 20 kids in a school here in Pennsylvania, in the United States.
Right.
So yeah. We're looking to see how that's going to roll out the door.
Yeah, I'm gonna ban guns, ban knives next, then I guess. That's where they're going with it, right? To try to disarm America and the rights that you guys have had for such a long time of the right to defend yourself with arms, you know. But Ulla, I just wanted to make that comment as well, that this is a, because what you just mentioned there is a huge giveaway to me, that the sloppiness of some of these false flag operations is almost too much to fathom, and I cannot wrap my heads around the fact of why they want to do it to that degree. If it's, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that it's a conscious thing, but I think that with the money, with the type of people, with the type of things that they have to their, you know, in their coffers at their advantage, they would do a better job.
But I tell you, when I was looking into the Palme assassination, I spent almost 30 years looking into that, and I came into so much. Evidence, manipulated evidence, fabricated evidence that was so clumsily made that at one point I almost felt like going to the secret police in Sweden just saying, come on, guys, hire me. You know, I can do it. I know what to look for. I know what to look out for. I didn't mean that seriously, but I almost felt like doing it because they were doing such a sloppy job. And then I met some of the people from the SÄPO, the Swedish security police of. And I just, first I thought, my God, he's working for them. He must really be professional. He must be. And then it was just like, they were just like kids almost, like really. And they were not aware of what we knew and didn't know because they were in so much into their little world of spy games and setups. And so I totally lost respect for them, I must say. And I do not think they do this on purpose, but it's just that the general population is still so asleep that they get away with it.
Yeah.
So I do not think that they're giving out hints saying that, look at this, it's so sloppy, you can see this and this. Absolutely not. They're trying it, but they're just not doing a very good job.
Yeah, yeah. Was a couple other things there as well, Chip. That came to me as I was thinking about this and the connection again to Iran-Contra and all that. I wanted to ask you if there's something you knew about when it comes to, for example, the Inslaw affair. I know that Danny Casolaro talked about this with Octopus, that kind of connection, the Promise software and everything else. What, do you have any knowledge about that?
No, I don't. That was completely out of our realm.
So that might be like another layer on top of things which just didn't connect with the military aspect of it, perhaps.
Exactly. And, you know, that software, the base language of that software, I understand, is even being used today, but highly upgraded. So
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Chip, can I ask you about Clinton and when it comes to your part of the operations and so on? Was that somebody you met personally as well?
I did. I met him when he was the governor. The first time I met him when he was governor, but I met him several times after that. Yes, you can ask.
No, but did you see him personally being part of receiving the drugs and being part of the distribution and so on with Dan Lasseter, or was that not something you personally was?
No, we personally flew. We had a flight, cross-country flight from Fort Campbell with 160th a night vision flight. We're doing cross-country. I think our ultimate destination was somewhere in Texas, and our first leg of the flight we flew to Little Rock. And we dropped a cooler off at Little Rock Air Force Base for a limo that came up, and out of the limo came Mr. Lasseter and who we were told was the governor of Arkansas, Bill Clinton. And the cooler had money and drugs both in it. That was the only time I'd gone there, but other pilots from 160th had gone there on other occasions also.
Vincent Foster?
No.
Nope.
Read about him. One of the most depressed men in the world to shoot himself twice in the head, huh?
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Well, the Clinton. Go ahead.
No, I know somebody who stabbed himself 15 times, and he was really depressed, I must say.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's amazing that this can go on and people are still so so gone to it, you know, and that. So what will it take? I mean, obviously, it helps when people are speaking out about it like you are, Chip, but what do you think we're looking at here to be able to kind of combat the threat, if you will, that we're faced with? What can we do?
You know, what in some of our meetings, planning meetings that we held, one remark made was we need to make sure that our military is ready and at hand to take care of things here in the States in case the people go through uprisings or something like that. And I stood up. I told him, I said, sir, you have to understand the United States military will never stand up against our own people. We won't do it. And he said at that time, he said, you know, well, as long as we keep them a roof over their head, food on their table, gas in their car, they're going to be fine and they'll take whatever we have to offer. However, that being said, we can train the military as policemen. And that way, when they come back, they will be accustomed to policing. And that's basically what we've been doing the past 10 years is military being policemen. My son, a special operations instructor now in Fort Benning, Georgia, his last day at work was Monday, and he left just because they quit being military men and they started being policemen.
You know, that's very interesting. I was sitting next to someone when we were traveling, and it was a gentleman who had been in the military for about 8 years, I think, and it was fairly young still, but he mentioned to me, we got into a long conversation, and he mentioned how he'd seen the military change even in his time, and he said that now they're almost turned, he mimicked what you just said, he said they're being turned into a kind of a police instead, but he also talked about how they're becoming more almost, you know, it was a political correctness there and everything. It was very strict. It's almost like they're reshaping them to turn them into another kind of force, if you will, in the world. So it's not that they want to withdraw all the troops from the rest of the world. Of course, they still want to use it, but that the motivations for what they should and shouldn't do, it seems to be kind of changing. So that's interesting.
Right. He was Special Forces instructor, and they weren't allowed to yell at the recruits. It wasn't politically correct.
Exactly. What is that? You know, it's like bizarre. Yeah. So what do you think that's going to do? I mean, we have a scenario here where they're seeking to, of course, not NATO per se, but although that's still a very powerful and strong force in the world, but, you know, more of a United Nations type army. You have possibly foreign troops in America to keep things in check. And for that purpose, having them potentially being the ones who can actually shoot at the locals as the U.S. military wouldn't do that. There's been talks about those kinds of things. What do you make of that?
Well, yeah, and I think that could very well be. But I think the best avenue we have is this avenue that we're on right now, is the alternative media getting out there and getting making enough noise and credible noise, not just noise to make noise, but credible noise, where the media, where the mainstream media has to take it and look at it and pay attention to it and start turning and asking more questions. And honestly, I see that now on this Flight 370. I see the mainstream press asking more questions about, well, is it possible to control these aircraft? And, you know, I was on CBS, and that's mainstream, on Sunday. And we talked about all the different scenarios that could be. And they're really starting to, I don't know whether it's to be able finally to do this, that certain entities in the government are standing behind the mainstream press and allowing them to, because I know before anything that they would put on had to be approved by their attorneys for liability purposes. So they really weren't willing to get out there and say anything, or because of government interruption in their business. So,
yeah.
But I'd say if we can get the mainstream press starting to move in the right direction, that's who the people are listening to on the whole. And if they hear it there, they'll believe it.
But look at the Bilderberg Group, for instance. That was, their existence was denied for so many years. And we, a small group of people, were just pumping it out, doing everything we could to expose it. And then finally last year, that was the, as far as I know, the first year when it was officially accepted that they existed. And the media was called to outside London in Watford. But then again, there was this diversion with the so-called Woolish beheading, where suddenly the whole press was looking at this false flag where they claimed that some Muslims had chopped the head of a soldier. Really sloppily made once again. But also see that, I would say, the War Tribune in Kuala Lumpur, where they tried George Bush Jr., Dick Cheney, other people for Tony Blair for crimes against humanity, and now with the Pope and the Queen being subpoenaed to court as well. The thing is really happening now. There's such an awakening going on. I think it's a super time to be alive. Very challenging, very testing, but a beautiful time to see this awakening. So I'm super positive.
Now, let me just for a moment comment on that, because it's a good point as well. And I wanted to bring a focus to a different possibility there as well with Bilderberg, because I think you're right. I think it was last year they were basically the first Bilderberg where they've actually announced beforehand where they were going to be. And Patrick Henningsen,
they couldn't deny it anymore.
Right, but there's another possibility there. And it was Patrick Henningsen over 21st Century Wire talked about the idea that they actually did a bait and switch, that they set this up to actually get people focused on a completely different event in itself, right? Because my argument, I'm not saying it's not good that people are like aware of this or whatnot, but my point has always been, if it was meant to be a secret meeting, it doesn't hold that quality anymore. Today it's going to be a meeting that we don't even know, have the name about, but they keep the Bilderberg kind of festivity facade going, if you will, right?
And then they more or less twist a little bit what the Bilderbergers all actually are, too. You
know, exactly, yeah. So,
yeah. No, I think this thing with bait, I think you're spot on there. I do not think that that was the real meeting almost. It's almost like they had the meeting in a different spot and the spotlight was pointed at that place because they couldn't get away with it.
Exactly, so yeah.
That I think otherwise they would be stupid. And now they're talking about it being in the Marriott Hotel in Copenhagen.
Denmark,
I'm sure they would be in Johannesburg or something like that.
Yeah, well,
and everybody
exactly.
would stand looking at the Marriott Hotel.
Exactly.
Otherwise they would be stupid. And we're talking about very intelligent people.
Yeah.
Not very compassionate people, but very, very intelligent, many of them. So I would totally credit that.
And they'll have their lookalikes going in and out of there with their limousines and whatnot, and they'll keep the masses happy for a while, right?
You know, we've had several meetings that were held on military bases by them, where everything's locked out. We'd fly them in, fly them out, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why not wouldn't you do it in that kind of setting? Of course, you have, well, even when you have business leaders and high up people from the corporate world and politicians, you still can do that aspect, of course. But Chip, I wanted to ask you a little bit about what do you make of American foreign policy and the Israel's hold over America. you know, APAC. You mentioned Mossad. There was quite a few operations done in unison with them, I guess, as well. Any comments on that?
Well, for years, I know the Mossad had a hold over the presidents, the Iran-Contra, because the Mossad are the ones who actually gave the idea to the president to hold off on the election, not to the president, but to the parties to hold off on announcement and about the release of those prisoners, holding those prisoners longer, and then releasing them on Reagan's inauguration day. You know, that in itself, what would the people think if Israel came back and said, hey, you know, Reagan did do that, and we can prove it. So right there, they've blackmailed Reagan, and they have a president in their pocket.
Yeah.
And they continue to do things like that, and they have continued to do things like that. But I honestly don't think this president has acquiesced to that. I think he's kept a cushion there, and I'm almost sure by his actions that he's not in their pocket.
Really? Wow. Well, so who's he's obviously under someone's control? Is it the mob out of Chicago or what?
Haven't figured that out yet.
Well, maybe someone in Kenya, huh?
I believe he's friends with the Iranians. I believe he's friends with the Russians. I really do.
Well, his anti-colonialism, like D'Souza pointed out in the Obama 2016 documentary, seems very interesting that there's actually an inherent resentment from Obama's point of view against America and what it has represented in the past. And he's done his utmost to not only economically overwhelm it, but also politically, so that it will lead to the destruction or the breakdown of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, we work in indicators and intelligence, and you hear their little off-camera conversations. Hey, wait till after the second election, and I'll have more room to do that for you. You know,
right?
Little things like that speak volumes of which direction they're looking at going. And Obama's tough words to Russia and, you know, look, over the Ukraine, over Crimea, what really was accomplished out of that? Because no one's going to go to war anyhow, and he knew it. So he has to go out there and be tough on TV for the American people. But in the truth is, he knew nothing could be done, nothing would be done other than slapping the hands of a few guys over there that don't have any money in the banks here by seizing the money that they don't have in banks here.
yeah, well, exactly. Now, do you believe that there actually are, there's always a degree of infighting, of course, among people who are power hungry, but are the divisions so prominent as the media, both in the West and the East in this regard, are trying to point out, that there's this immense tug of war and it's almost like we have to hold back so it doesn't turn into World War III here? Or is that just a kind of a play for something for the theater here?
I think it's a play for the theater, but I also think that there's a lot of power being a new player on the block. Let me put it like this. There is a new player on the block, and they're very strong, and they are causing a lot of problems for the old powerhouse. And so between those two, it could cause problems, and it could end up with a war, just a made-up war and for no reason. But it could really end up for them to try to outpower the other, you know.
Right.
I really think that could be, because there are growing a new powerhouse. There is growing a new powerhouse to go up against the corporations. That's, you know, who I call what you all are calling the New World Order. They're the corporations for me, and that's who they form corporations around the world, and they have alliances with those corporations, and they're hidden through corporations. So,
and is there anything more you can say about who the upcoming opposition to this is?
I think you have some high-ranking U.S. military leaders, for one thing.
Right.
Can I? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I just want to. We were talking about Obama here. Could you comment on this thing about his real name being Barry Soitero, and with a background in the CIA, a history in the CIA before he turned into Barack Obama? Is that something you know anything about?
I don't know, but my name could be Alex Klein. My name could be Gene Duncan. My name could be.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. You know, they're so good with identities.
Well, his dad's name is Frank Marshall, right? He's a card-carrying communist, I think.
But thing about him almost being created like a Trojan horse and driven, his identity being totally created, that he's this Barack Obama doesn't even exist as a real person with a fake social security number, everything about him fake.
I'm not saying it's not true. I'm not saying it's true. I honestly don't know. Is it possible? Sure, it's possible. It's not impossible. The power of computers and the power to build something, very easily done right now. Mm-hmm. And always has been very easily mimicked. You know, we worked a lot with witness protection programs and other things, and we would create people out of thin air. That was no problem at all. Credit histories, everything. Credit histories, school histories, the works.
I know Fletcher Prouty, the man who is called X in Oliver Stone's film JFK. Fletcher Prouty, he mentioned that, I think it was Alan Dulles, he was with Alan Dulles, the former CIA director, in Greece, and they were traveling around, and he said, look at that luxury organization over there. And Prouty looked over there, and he said, do you know what's in there? And he said, I have no idea. He said, they're all our agents, sleeping agents, active assassins, all of them in there were CIA people. Is this something you know about, like you've been living in Florida, which is very central within with the history with the CIA and this, that there are actual like urbanizations or small communities where sleeping agents or retired agents or so on are housed or taken care of
and on call? Yes.
Yeah, but that there are specific small communities like that.
Mm-hmm. I know of a group in Costa Rica. I know of a group in Germany. I know of a group in Italy. So yes,
they're there waiting for potential orders, and if not, they're just living happily wherever they are.
They were, you know, I'm gone now, but they were.
Yeah.
Yes. We had what we called, just like there's safe houses, we have safe communities. We have communities where we know it's safe for these people to be and to operate, and they'll have everyday jobs. They'll, you know, they can be retirees. They can, you know, but retirees that are young, you know, you retire from the government young in the United States. And so they're living there, and they have their job. They have their, they may be very politically aligned in those countries, but they are awaiting orders.
Near a golf course.
One of the best places to be.
Interesting.
It's a weird, strange world we're living in. There's so much going on behind the scene that the normal eye won't see.
Is there any more questions, Ulla, that you want to ask Ship before we begin to round things up for this time? Obviously, we could continue for hours and just talk about all this stuff here. There's so much more to it, but anything in specific you have in mind?
No, I would, if you could tell us a little about, what's his name, the president candidate, Ross Perot. What happened around him that I know you were involved in, and would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Well, I know President Bush was very unhappy with Perot, with the way he was cutting into the vote and splitting the vote with his new independent party. And Perot and Bush have a large history of not being friends. You know, Perot had his own ways of doing things, and Bush had his own way of doing things. And both Texas boys, you know, they've gone head to head many, many times in many, many areas, and including, you have to remember, Perot's people were the ones that were in prison in Iran when we had the failed hostage rescue. And that was partly a Bush operation. So they had hard feelings against one another forever. And Perot flat out said, you know, I want to do anything and everything I can do to keep that man out of office. And so that was his whole idea behind that. And Bush understood that. And Bush said, I want to do everything I can do to get him out of the presidential run. And so he tasked one of the OSGs in one of the meetings. He said, Tatum, we need you guys to neutralize Mr. Perot. Get him out of this. Get him out of the running here. Do whatever you need to do. But, you know, he didn't mean hurt him. He just meant neutralize him. Neutralizations are done. We could intimidate. We could kidnap. We could we could basically terminate, but that wasn't the meaning behind this. And that's pretty well was the feather that broke the camel's back, or however it said that I wasn't going any farther. I said, no, sir, I'm not going to do that. I told you before, I don't work on American citizens. It's outside of our purview. It has to be offshore. And he said, well, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you. I said, well, I'm telling you, I'm done. And I left. And one of the other commanders picked it up. You know, that was just me.
there will always be another guy willing to fill that spot, huh?
Always will be another guy.
Yeah. I'm just so amazed, you know, that there's military men agreeing to do this, you know?
And historically speaking, when you look back, what they did is they went to Perot. They said, we're going to release some bad information about your daughter. And her wedding's coming up, so we'll just spoil that. And so he said, okay, I'm done. And after the wedding was over, he came back in.
Wow. Business as usual. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, is there anything you would like to leave us with here, Chip, in terms of, I don't know, something to watch, something to warn for, some good tips or some something more encouraging in terms of what could be done or whatnot? If so, please feel free to get that out to us. And of course, we want to give up both of your guys' websites and everything as well, so we can also end on that. But yeah, if there's anything before that, Chip, please let us know.
I'd just like to encourage everyone to do a little bit more in about what you see as indicators. Something, when you see something and you just feel, boy, something's wrong there, it probably is. And that's when you need to dig a little deeper and start asking more questions. And if you feel that, you should call your local news agency and say, hey, what about this? And if they got 5,000 calls about something like that in a day, they would have to pay some attention to it, one would think. I don't know. Being new back here, I don't know, in the United States, they may start paying attention if they get enough calls in. In addition to that, you have your mobile devices. There are a lot of places out there where you can post to get other people's attention. You have Facebook, you have Twitter. You can go to wikiarmy.com and post it in there. We have about 5,000 readers, new readers a day coming in there. I just encourage you not to just sit there and think about it, but do something about it, even if it's just a text to someone else.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good point. And you know what? I have a little different view on that. I think people shouldn't give away their scoop to these sloppy local media channels. They should put it out on their own, and they should become the new media. We shouldn't give these people their work, right? I mean, I think it's a good thing that they're actually so bad at the job that they're doing and the misrepresentation, underreporting, and everything else, right? Because that is what turning people away from it. And I think that that has strengthened the alternative media. So I think that that's a, I know exactly what you're talking about, of course, Chip, but I'm just have a different little angle on that. So.
Right. Uh-huh.
All right. Well, give us the website again, Chip, and you know, where people can pick up more of your work. And then of course also, where they can listen to you here shortly.
You can see me on veteranstoday.com. My articles are there. I write about one article a week. My website is chiptatum.com. And the link for my new radio program is there. And wikiarmy.com is there for all of you to post to provide information to others, to practice writing. And then if you feel you're good enough, you can open up your own blog and your own website. I encourage it. Practice away.
Very, very good. Wikiarmy.com will have that linked up with the other ones as well that you mentioned. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Chip. Really appreciate your time. Thank you for talking with us. This was very interesting and enlightening, and I'm very glad we touched base with you. I remember many, many years ago, I listened to some interviews that you did with Ted Gunderson, who unfortunately is not with us anymore today. But nonetheless, thank you again for coming on, and keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me, Henrik. Ole, good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you.
And let's give out your details here before we wrap things up, Ole, as well. Give us the websites and everything else you'd like to mention before we wrap up with ShipPair then.
I just want to say, first of all, that I think it's extremely important to inform ourselves about our rights, because it's only when we know the real rights that we can stand up against this type of power. And the way to go is absolutely not with violence, revenge, hate that way. It's instead or doing revolutions. You listen to the word revolution, that will just repeat the whole thing. And if we use force or violence, they will use it as an excuse to hit back violently towards us. And they're so much stronger when it comes to that game. So the thing is to evolve, transcend above this whole thing. In a non-violent way, stand up, inform yourself, speak out, but do not hit back like that. And anything I can do to be part of a non-violent, beautiful, evolving movement, I'm right there. Whatever it is, I'm right there. And my website is lightonconspiracies.com. One of my books is Coup d'etat in slow motion, about the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, but also with the links to many, many of these assassinations and terror acts globally. And I've even been able to track down some of the same assassins that were present in Dealey Plaza 1963, that was also present in Stockholm 23 years later when the Swedish Prime Minister was taken out, and many, many other. I mean, they were part of taking out John Lennon, Che Guevara, Salvador Allende, Robert Smith in South Africa. Carlos Pratt, Orlando Letier. I mean, the line, it just goes on and on and on and on. But Henry, if it's okay, I would very much like to end with a prayer. Not that I'm religious, but I feel that there's a beautiful prayer that one of my yoga teachers uses. Mm-hmm. Would that be okay?
Sure. Go ahead.
She normally finishes like this. She says, "May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light."
All right. Well, thank you, Ole, for helping us to connect with Chip as well, helping us to set this up, and for coming on with us, of course. Really interesting having you both guys with us. So we'll end on that note for this time. Thanks to you both, and hope we can do it again at some point.
Thank you so much. My absolute pleasure.
And that concludes Red Eyes Radio for today, guys and gals. Thank you for listening. We have upcoming Dr. Ricardo Duchesne on the uniqueness of Western civilization and multicultural madness. We have Dale Hurd on the Swedish experiment. Also Sultan Isvan for a pro-transhumanist perspective. And then we have Maria Kvilhaug from Norway for more on Norse mythology and the Viking series that we've been doing. A special thanks to you for your membership and for keeping our program going, also helping us to grow and expand, of course. We will be back in just a few days. We'll see you on the website. In the meantime, take good care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.